It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
So over the weekend, the Green Party held their annual general meeting. Now, the AGM has raised many questions regarding the transparency of the party's policies and discussions that happened at the meeting, as there was limited media access to the events, and leading media and supporters questioning whether the Greens have done enough to be re-elected next term. I spoke to James Shaw about these media and supporters' responses. We also talked a little bit about his recent announcement of a new climate action plan government-wide. So here is James. Just to begin with the AGM, I'm sure you've had a lot of questions about the AGM over the weekend, but I wanted to just check in and ask just generally, how did it all go?
It actually went really well. So, I had a lot of people coming up and saying that they felt re-energised and re-inspired, and in particular ahead of next year, being an election year, people saying it was really good, chance for them to kind of reconnect with, what we've done and what's coming up next. So, yeah, I'm really pleased overall.
So obviously this year there were some questions around the transparency of the event because of the lack of media access to all aspects of the AGM. I know you've explained this by saying that there is a concern that the media continues to paint an unfair caricature of the Green Party. What is this caricature and is it shifting?
Yeah, well, so actually the funny thing is that the format of the conference hasn't changed in years, but I think some of the media got their noses out of joint because they felt that they had to travel all the way to Dunedin to cover a conference that only had sort of three or four open slots, but it's the same number that they normally have. But normally they wouldn't have had to travel so far. So I think that was sort of behind some of the grumpiness that we had from some of the media outlets. I don't think there's a single political party that doesn't close off some sessions because they want to be able to have private conversations away from the glare of the media. I just think that's kind of appropriate. But I also know that, a few years ago, when we were still in opposition, members of the party had just gotten really frustrated at the portrayal of Green Party members as this kind of stereotypical ragged hippie kind of mental image, and didn't feel that was a fair portrayal. And so I think that they kind of just said, well, if you're going to keep running those sort of stories, we're not really interested in having you in anything other than the most stage-managed sessions. I think that's changed now that we're in government. We've got a track record. I think people are seeing that, we're a very responsible partner in government, and we're getting the work done. And so maybe that kind of caricature is shifting.
So just talking a little bit about that shift as well, Green Party candidate Jack McDonald stepped down saying he's concerned that the party is turning centrist under your leadership. What are your thoughts on that? Is there a concern that consistent Green Party voters may view this as well and change their vote?
Well, actually, the members that we've been surveying people, and members and voters and saying, well, how do you think we're doing? Actually, the message that we're getting back is people are really pleased with the progress that we're making. Of course, they want to go further, but they also understand that in an MMP environment where you're not the largest party, that you kind of have to cut your cloth according to your circumstances. And so I think generally the mood's very, very positive. We always knew going into government for the first time that there would be people who couldn't handle some of the compromises that come with being in government. And I think Jack was essentially expressing that kind of concern.
I suppose if the Green Party wants to continue to be in a coalition relationship with the government in next election, you're going to have to continue in this sort of way and have to make those compromises. Do you think that is going to affect voting, or do you think that hopefully people see that is unfortunately just the reality of MMP and we have to make compromises to make decisions and make things happen?
Well, I think if you look at our polling, it's been rock solid since election night. And that's actually really unusual for a party of government. Usually what happens with smaller parties when they partner up with larger parties to form a government is that their polling collapses and they sort of disappear. And in part that's because, you know, I think their voters have an inflated expectation about what a small party can do. I think our voters are clearly really pragmatic, like they've got that vision and they want to see us implement our policies. But at the same time, they can see that we are developing a pretty good track record of progress. And so my sense is that actually when it comes to the broader electorate next year, that they'll stick with us because they have so far.
Now, you said in your speech at the AGM, this is sort of a diversion to something a little bit different, but talking about climate denial, and you said that climate denial is dangerous, particularly when it comes from government leaders. Can you explain why that is a problem and if that continues, why that is a problem?
Yeah, so what I was saying was that I think that climate denialism has evolved into something actually sort of more insidious in some ways because it sounds so kind of reasonable. It sort of doesn't deny that climate change is happening. It just denies that you need to do anything about it. So what I was saying, is if you look at some of the examples of things that some people have said recently, it's all these kind of soothing words about, you know, how, you know, there isn't a crisis, this isn't a climate emergency, we don't need to incentivize the uptake of electric vehicles, we don't need to put a price on agricultural emissions, we don't need to stop oil and gas exploration, you know, we can basically keep on doing business as usual and somehow climate change will go away. And I think that the point I was making in my speech is I think that is incredibly dangerous thinking because the window of opportunity that we've got to do anything about climate change is closing very rapidly.
And yeah, the concern is that if it is people in leadership positions within the country or in across the world, people are giving that opinion, the public are going to view that and also have that opinion too? Is that sort of the concern that it's a follow-on effect?
Yeah, that's right. Particularly because we all know that, look, I mean, climate change is really inconvenient.
Absolutely.
And everybody is, things are going to be different in the future than they are today, whether we choose to do something about it or not. You know, if you're kind of feeling a bit anxious or a bit confused or anything like that, then, you know, it's very easy to be seduced by this notion that it's all fine and you don't really need to do anything different. That comes as quite a relief. It's very believable, very reasonable, sounds reasonable. And so that's why I think it's so dangerous, right? Because, you know, there are many people who are worried about what the future may bring. You could find that all of the momentum for change starts to peter out and to fizzle because you've got people saying, look, actually, you don't really need to change. You can just keep doing what you've always done.
So continuing on with our climate sort of talk, can you explain your announcement about the Climate Action Plan?
Yeah, so this is the first time that any government has ever had a climate action plan right across the government. And what it comes from is last year the Productivity Commission wrote us a massive 509-page report with 77 recommendations and dozens of sub-recommendations saying, here's how you shift the economy over the course of the coming 30 years from where we are today to a low-carbon economy. And what we've spent months and months doing, given the size and complexity of their report and recommendations, is going through with the different agencies saying, well, what's our response to those recommendations? And actually, we've come down in favour of all but one of the recommendations. And so what I released on Saturday was the government's response to the Productivity Commission's recommendations and saying, okay, this is what we're intending to do. Here are the responsible agencies, here are the responsible ministers, and here's the timeframe that we're going to be working on each of these things with.
So how is this different to what the government is already doing about the climate emergency?
Well, there is roughly half of the recommendations we actually are already working on. So, you know, I guess having this plan hasn't in development hasn't stopped us from getting on with the job, but it does sort of point to what's next. You know, once we get through the current work program, what are the things that we need to start moving on? And it's really useful, I think, for the public service to have all of that in one place, and to say, well, you know, for the sake of completeness, I guess, to be able to say, okay, who's accountable for what? And like I said, no government before has ever had a cross-government climate action plan. It's generally just been the kind of role of the Minister for Climate Change and Ministry for the Environment to kind of chip away on things like the emissions trading scheme. And the rest of government has often pulled in the opposite direction. And so what this is about is making sure that the whole public service is pointed in the same direction.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.